Hi, this is Amy.
And this is Andrew. And in this episode, AADL talks to veteran Ann Arbor News photographer Jack Stubbs.
Jack Stubbs was a photographer for the Ann Arbor News for nearly 30 years. From the late 1960s to the mid-1990s, Jack photographed everything from weather scenes and crime scenes to U of M football games. And he was there to shoot some of the highlights of this period in Ann Arbor history, including student protests, the 1968 flood, and the trial of John Norman Collins.
Stanger, the boss, Eck, I don't know if he started photo department, but he was there as a writer way back in the 30s. He graduated from Michigan. And then they threw him a camera and said, you're the photographer. And being German, he could be the photographer. I mean, Eck was that smart. And he had a lady, always a good-looking one, that worked and did all the negative filing. She'd come in every afternoon, like 3 days a week, and type all the da-da-da-da-da, file all these by card index. Then when Eck left, I don't know who the boss was, but we never again had a person help. Well, you can't shoot all day, come back, process, da-da-da-da, do negatives. So I ended up like bushel baskets full of 35 millimeter that I put down. I had a flood. I would block up the drains and have a flood and get rid of all these negatives. Say, where's your negatives from May, June, and July? And I said, they're gone. They got ruined. So that's what happened. When he no longer would hire, or the company would not hire a person that went, that how all the disarray came about with negatives. The other thing was that he did 4x5 and 2.25. And that's a lot easier to deal with than five rolls of 35 millimeter, as you well know. We go football games, shoot 6, 7, 8 rolls, depending on how many drinks I had. Was anything in focus? Not much. Then what do you do with all these negatives? And when 35 millimeter, Doug Fulton, I don't know if you know him, but he was a good shooter. He was kind of the environmental, he died in Arizona. He's 5, 6, 7 years ago. He did really good job with his negatives. And he stole a lot of them. I know that. A lot of them never ended up in the Ann Arbor News file. The other thing was, when I came here in 68, we could print and sell our pictures individually. So who wants to go shoot here in high school tennis team picture? Well, nobody, of course. I'll go. Because it was $28 in my pocket. I'd charge them $1 each for a print, Ann Arbor newspaper, right? So team pictures, which nobody ever wanted to shoot, now all of a sudden became popular. and so then they came through when Newhouse bought the whole outfit. They changed the whole that was the other thing. We had our own equipment. Every guy had, girl, whoever, had their own photo. Newhouse said, oh, no more. We're going to buy the equipment, and we're going to take the money for reprints. Which, you know, in a way, they're a business. But I thought, yeah, you no longer can freelance. I said, oh, yeah? I mean, I can't shoot a job on Sunday afternoon or a wedding Saturday? We'll see. So they tried to, you know, get us on it, but we shot it anyhow. So
when was that? Negative thing, when was really. That Newhouse bought the paper?
How long? Maybe 70, 70s, 8, 78, maybe some. Well, they bought Booth. They bought all the 8 papers. And for the most part, they were very good people. My wife worked for them. She was a circulation manager in Ann Arbor and assistant. And then she went to Jackson and was the boss. And it's a big Jewish family. All the employees, basically our family. And Dick Diamond called on her, and he was married to one of the Newhouse ladies' sisters, and she just loved him to death. He was the nicest boss. You couldn't, you know. So they were good. They treated us good. Never had to have a union because they, you know, you get 3 weeks vacation. And the pay was not really great to live in Ann Arbor. I could have lived in Muskegon and made the same amount of money, which is, you know, how that goes. So, but they had some policies that weren't quite, but as photos, you know, you just kind of do around the edges.
Can you talk a little bit more about Eck Stanger as a photographer and as a...
Yeah. Eck, I don't know if you know John Hathaway, He has a lawyer in town, and he had a little office down by the diner, Fleetwood, next door to that building. And they had a historical club that met there every Wednesday or Thursday noon. And John Hathaway was kind of the leader, and Eck was a member of that. And Eck was very, and I don't know if he's a history major at Michigan or what he was, but he was very historical minded in terms of Ann Arbor. I mean, he knew a lot. I mean, he was very much into sports, and he started in the 30s, and I can't tell you exactly when, but he and Eric New was next door to us, and he was the engraver. And he had one guy helping. And back then, they had to engrave every photo. It was a really big process. I don't know how the whole thing went. But like when I was there, I could shoot a picture up to 10:30 in the morning out on the street someplace. And they could run it in today's paper at 1 o'clock. Where with Eric, like, I think 8:30 in the morning was like the latest they could get a photo and still get it in today's paper. So Eck and Eric were really close German buddies. If like I'm Irish and Indian, you were never part of the the troika down the basement. I mean, it was funny as hell, but we knew what was going on. But Eck was really a good, I mean, and he there once again, he started on 4x5, and then he graduated down to Rolleiflex 2 1/4. And that's as far as he went. He never shot 35. Well, when I went there, I was just making a changeover from 2 1/4. I don't know if you know the deal, but you can get much better quality out of a 2 1/4 Hasselblad or a Rolleiflex than you can a Nikon under most conditions. So, I mean, I shot grainy stuff and really kind of, you know, the quality wasn't what X was. X got a great photo, if you come across it. His kid printed it. Rolling out the, what the number was, I can't tell you, the 100th B-29 or B-25 out of Willow Run, where the bomber factory, and all the employees were gathered around. He got up on a roof or something and shot 4x5. Oh, it's a gorgeous photo. I mean, normally we would never run that kind of photo, but the way Eck did it, it was like an art piece. I mean, he was, and of course, all black and white. And he was very good. And he was into music. So we shot a lot more entertainment and music and more just portraits of musicians. From Count Basie to, I mean, I got a really nice picture of Horowitz in front of Hill. I can't tell you when it was. I shot like a whole roll of film. He was so good. And Eck would do this all the time. And he got to know these people because Eugene Ormandy from the Philadelphia Orchestra would come here and Eck would go up there. And I can't think of his name. The guy was the head of the University Musical Society. Gail Rector. And he would call me, Jack, can you come up and make some photos for me, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, sure, I'll be up in an hour. So, well, I could go into rehearsals. And he wanted me to shoot he and Ormandy. Like, Gail was like that. You know, you're a really nice guy. And so I got to know a lot of, you know, and Eck had that for, well, I got there in 68, so he must have been like 25 years ahead of me, or 30 maybe. So he, and then after a while, we got a new editor, and we no longer did entertainment, basically. I mean, like, I could go to a Boy George concert and shoot color, even which we didn't run color, but I'd shoot two rolls of black and white and whatnot, and they'd run a picture, and it was cool. You know, they were open to that. And then it kind of just went by the way of whatever. It was too bad. And when Eck was gone, nobody was there to really, you know, Eck would go against the manager. He'd just say, here, this is, and it changed. But, you know, that's the way it probably all newspapers. When there's a change of government or who's what's your intent? The guy that was there when I left, I fought with him tooth and nail. He was in the exposés, like, we get this on the University of Michigan football or whatever, or that's what his, I never understood that, you know, he just had such a weird outlook about people, you know, he ran the business like he was afraid of everybody, you know, he didn't trust, and the way he was, I could understand why, but my wife worked for his wife in Jackson, she was the publisher and a really nice lady. But he was really, I never liked him at all. And I thought he was the worst choice for a newspaper editor that they could come up with. That's how newspapers work, though. You know, Newhouse picked him. So Eck was there when I came in 68. I think Fulton was, the reason I got a job as Fulton, they moved him from the photo department upstairs to be an environmental, blah, 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 blah. And he still shot, but not as much. And then Cecil came, ex-Marine character, really, really, really great guy. His brother's an artist, taught at Washtenaw Community. Cecil, I think, became the boss. Can't tell you what years. And Eck died like he was retired about 15 months, and he died in the 70s. His compatriot from the Jackson paper, I can't remember his name, but he had hired about the same time Eck did, and he was a good shooter, really. And he lasted 40 years at Jackson, and they had a really good photo editor. They were offset. They ran some really great pages. Can't remember the guy's name who ran the photo thing, but they blew us out of the water all the time. I mean, they had good shooters, and they ran really good stuff, and they used the pictures good. And then he died. He was a really nice guy. I ran into him all the time. Can't remember. But Eck, I can't tell you parts of him. he was a good boss. He was tough, but photo people are, you know, you can understand we had problems with management. We tear the back off a Nikon. I want a new Nikon. Well, yours works fine. Rip and throw it in the back seat of the car. Doesn't work anymore. Got dropped. Got stepped on. We were terrible. But Eck was really probably one of the really unappreciated photographers. And I didn't get there till he was probably 60-some. So he was kind of going downhill at the tail end. He was shooting advertising. We always had a contest, who could get the most mileage. And how to get the most mileage was we'd have to shoot houses for advertising. And then if you could get your car in the picture somehow, then that counted for extra. So Eck would shoot houses. I mean, he would have mileage triple what we had. How the hell, he doesn't shoot anything for editorial. Well, he'd, you know, go around and around the block and shoot. It was a racket. And he knew everybody in photo in Michigan. I mean, the Flint Journal had a really good photo staff. Barry Edmonds, Dante Levy, Battle. And funny part of it, Grand Rapids was the biggest paper, and they had the kind of the sleaziest photo department. And it's funny how the little paper, like Jackson, who there wasn't much money there and whatnot, they had one of the best photo departments. And it hadn't anything to do with size, how the management looked at photo. What's the value of photo, you know? And that basically, like now, this .com thing is such a rag, I don't even want it in my house. I don't want it on my floor near my chair. It'll, you know, contaminate my New York Times. It's the worst piece of shit that I've ever, you know, how Newhouse could put their name on this is beyond me. But there must be an ulterior motive. I don't know what it is. It's sad that, you know, when I left the news, as best I could recollect, there were like 1,780 dailies in the United States. So I always figured there were 4,000 to 5,000 photographers at a daily newspaper from New York Times with 25 and Long Island and Boston, the big papers. And now I wonder what it is. And there's not going to be any more. And I was thinking about it yesterday that daily newspapers were probably the biggest chronicle historic value in the United States for 100 and some years. Well, the artists start drawing the news. Then they somehow in 1900 or 1920, or they went to photos. And what is this, 2000? It's going to be gone. I mean, are you going to get it off your TV? Hell no. What, some person sitting there telling me about a fire in Florida? What's that? What's the value of that? Nothing. I think the other thing is a lot of people don't value still photos for whatever reason. I don't know why that is. Yesterday in the New York Times, they have an auction, Sotheby's or Christie's, for Eugene Smith Minamata photo. I'm assuming you've seen those of and they valued it at 15 to 18,000. And It's probably worth $100,000. I mean, this guy was probably one of the best shooters, period. I mean, and it's all going to be gone. I mean, gone. And there's going to be nothing from how Ann Arbor changes in the next 25 years, even if you just shoot blocks and buildings. And it's a shame, but that's business. You know, it's, oh, the electronics, oh, we can make a lot more money on the internet. And then.
Do you talk with some of the other photographers about this? And
I don't see them. Chase and I had a little, we had a get together, and then it kind of dropped off. And Tremel and I would see Tremel. Tremel's probably 80. He's a writer, cop writer, good guy. We covered a lot of the murders together. I think the news had some people getting together on a regular basis, but I didn't want to be part of that reminiscing. I mean, I got my own anger issues, you know. But so I don't have anything really to do with. I have probably more to do while I did until he died. Stanley Livingston, great shooter, great technician, smart devil. And the day Stanley died, I was going across. I was going to go see him before I left. I was going across South Dakota or something, and Mike Wolf called me. He said, oh, I got to tell you bad news. I said, I wonder why the hell is he calling me? I'm in South Dakota. Stanley died this morning of a heart attack. I said, what? I just saw him 3 days ago. I don't know where all his stuff went. He's a really, really, probably one of the best photographers all around. I got a great picture of him sitting at his computer, cigarette. He looks like Dylan Thomas sitting with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, you know, and he's about 80 pounds overweight. But he was a very smart, I'm telling you, it's like a equipment or what this lens does or doesn't do or what how you print this. And then. He had 8x10. He shot a lot of 8x10 stuff, you know, and big negative stuff. And he said the computer prints are five times better than anything he could have done with 8x10 negative. So he never left the computer. I mean, he sat there and he did a lot of advertising, commercial, really good stuff. I mean, he was a very talented guy. And he never got much exposure because he was like a commercial guy, you know. He didn't do weddings or any of that. But, you know, Mike Wolf, he owned Photo One out on Ellsworth Road. Really nice guy, another smart, brainy guy. Fix all his own machines. And Nancy Wolf is a painter. She's very good. Colleen, who worked for us, Fitzgerald, she stayed in Photo. She is a good shooter. We've had a lot of good shooters, but they didn't stay with the newspaper. And I was one of the few that stayed for 25 years. I got injured. Did you know I got hit?
Yeah, can you tell us about that?
Oh, I got hit in a Michigan-Florida State game in 80. The only time we ever played Florida State, 89. First quarter, Harbaugh was a quarterback. They had a stripe like this where you could go up this far to the field, but you couldn't go inside that. And you had to kneel down because the people behind you, you know, now they got a wall, so now you can stand up and shoot. And they used to have the band chairs right on the field. And that day the chairs were there, but nobody was in them. So Harbaugh pitched out to this guy, I can't remember his name, a big back, and he turned, he came right at me. And I had nowhere to go, really. By the time I got up, the two backs from Florida, who I didn't see coming from the left, hit me on the left side and split my kneecap in half. That's how hard they hit. Broke my wrist like in three places and tore my rotator cuff. I know it. So that was the first quarter, and I went off on a stretcher, and that was the end of that. What they kept doing, and Louis Meeks at orthopedic surgery, is they take out pieces of bone, not all of it at once. Why, I don't know. They did the little scope thing, but then the kneecap had to come out altogether. So they make a big cut like a shark bite, you know. So I had a really hard time walking, and the news got really crappy. And I had to get a lawyer. Because they were treating me like I was lying to them, which I never did. I told them everything right up front. Well, you're going to come in at 6 in the morning, and you're going to do all the computer stuff. I never even worked on a computer. What the hell are you talking about? I don't know. First thing about, you know, I took typing like 40 years ago. So I had to get a lawyer, and I got a really good one, finally. Mr. Cooper, I can't remember his first name, really cool guy. He looks like an old Yale-y lawyer from the way back, an old sweatshirt, tussled hair, paper stacked all over. Jack, sit down, tell me your sad tale. So he subpoenaed all my medical stuff, and I got out on a disability, which I found out later, this is ironic, a disability retirement from the news was less than a regular retirement for the time I had in. And I thought, well, I'm going to get out of here one way or the other. So I'm going to take a disability retirement, blah, blah. And that's what I did. And I really couldn't do the job. I really couldn't walk. I told him I'll do advertising. I'll do inside stuff. I'll do heads. You know, we do heads in the studio, blah, blah. Oh, no. Oh, no. You're going to do whatever we need. I said, I'm not getting in it. Going down I-94 to a fatal, walk a mile and a half because they blocked the highway. I can't do that. So we just separated. I want to say I must have lasted 4 years after the accident, so that would have been 93. I think I get $542 a month. It's like I got a 12-year-old daughter to send to college, for Christ's sakes. You know, what am I going to do? $542? That's when newspapers were always underpaid. They were always less than, because they knew they could get people to work for them for free because they were fun, you know. They knew that. You'd leave and they'd have three people there knocking on a door to get a job, you know. The money was, you never did it for the money. That's why we freelance. I had four kids, you know, going to wherever, whatever schools. And so we all freelanced. I mean, we'd get a call out of nowhere. Can you do a photo of a blah, 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 blah? I say, I can do it on lunch hour. $100. Okay. I ran so many jobs out of there. It's like I had a little commercial photography place. I didn't tell them. And you never, I shot a wedding last Saturday, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we did weddings for $400. Now they get $2,300 to shoot a black and white wedding. It's like I missed out. But so I had an attitude, though, because I fought with Petakevich, the editor. I mean, he would bring in the photo editor, him, the publisher, and this other guy in all the white shirts and ties would be sitting over there. And there was me, my lawyer. I never brought my lawyer to the paper, but I could get him on the phone if I needed him. And they would say, this is what you're going to do. We got a new job description. They kept sending me all over for evaluations. They were all the same. Because this man's able to work maybe 15, 20 hours a week on a limited basis, blah, 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 blah. Oh, no, no, oh, no. This is what you're going to, you're going to be the photo janitor. I said, up yours. I got up and walked out. I said, I'll see you guys later. You got me mixed up. You got the wrong person. And that's how they treated me. Call my lawyer, David Cooper. David, what do? He said, keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut. So we went round and around. Then finally I got out. It was a good thing. It was good for them. It was good for me. And the news photo, from what I saw over the years, they went through a lot of changes due to partly to technology, and partly they hired a lot of bad people, a lot of bad hires that I thought that never really allowed the photo department to make the transitions into the modern world until Lon Herwertel and the late guys came in, Warren, that group. They got a photo editor that I never thought they really utilized those people either. I mean, that's how we are, though. You never think they're utilized the way they should be for the talent they've got. I mean, to go out and shoot a bag of dog food for an ad, they just never utilized their time, you know, and it was really sad. But at the end, then the electronics took over, the electronic darkroom, no more printing. So it all changed. And I was really glad that I could get out. I mean, I felt bad for a while because I've been in photo 33 years almost, you know, different papers. And then all of a sudden you don't have a job, you know, as a you're not part of a newspaper. It was hard. It was really hard. Then later on, after a year or two, oh, the other thing I didn't tell you, I'd quit drinking in there. All the time, like before I would cover a football game, I had the most seniority. So what they would do is say, here's the assignments. I got Eastern Michigan and Middleville, Kentucky. We've got blah, blah, and we got Michigan at 1 o'clock. And I said, I'll take Michigan at 1 o'clock. And I'd go to the Wonder Bar. I don't know if you weren't here when the Wonder Bar was on 4th Ave. It was like a UN bar where we had all of black guys from Clint's, the pool hall, come over And it was really great. I mean, fights go on. You could get any color television you wanted out of there. What do you want? Do you want a 24-inch, a 32-inch? They'd bring in racks of clothes from Briarwood on a rack in the plastic. Well, they stole them off a truck. Well, what size you got? You want a 42 short? The cops were right around the corner. I mean, they knew what was going on. And every once in a while, the cops would raid it, you know. Oh, God, it was a great place. And I lived there, basically, because I'd go there on lunch hour, drink 6-7 beers, go back to work, get in arguments all the time. I had to apologize to almost everybody because I was drinking all the time. And it was insane. But I quit drinking about 2 years before I got hit. I was trying to think of why I quit. I can't remember why. But so I was sober 2 or 3 years when I got hit, I think, because now I got 27 years in the next week. It was really strange. But see, if they'd have done a blood thing at U Hospital when they hauled me up in a stretcher and I had 0.196 or whatever it was, I'd have been screwed because you could have got out of the way if you were sober, but it never came up. So I was in the clear. So I lucked out, really. I mean, and I did try to do what the doctors told me to do, whereas if I was still drinking, out, you know, go to hell, you know. There was a lot of newspaper people that I hung out with, the boozers. You're going home. It's only 8 o'clock. We just got started. You know, so you hang with the, and we had a crowd at the paper that were, and every paper I was at was the same deal. I mean, where I started a small paper up north where I grew up, Manistee. It was owned by the Batdorfs. They owned the Traverse City, Wretched Eagle, Big Rapids Pioneer, Sheboygan, Charlevoix, I don't know, but the guy there, I got a photo job. I never developed a roll of film in my life. I never made a print. I just said, oh, yeah, I know how to do that shit. And I didn't know any of it. But I met the guy in the advertising that Bill Henry would come back at night and help me learn how to print. I mean, I went through, you know, you just don't walk in there and start making really nice negatives and make really great prints. And I wasted a lot, that's how I learned on the job. It was cool. I was there 2 years, I think. $75 a week for 6 days a week. My take home was $55.35 for 6 days. So that's, I mean, it's cool because I lived on it. I didn't pay anybody rent. I didn't pay, towed my car out of the driveway. but I stayed in photo 32 years, I think, and I had a great time. I mean, I absolutely, you know what it was? I was thinking about it. It's like an education, because here in Ann Arbor, in Battle Creek, it was like, that was Little Chicago. That was a train yard, a stockyard, a rough town. But here, when I came here, it was like, you got to meet and know so many. Schembechler came the same year I did, right in that neighborhood. And I got to know him, you know. Stop, make the damn photo. We got to get the hell out of here. We got work to do. That's how you treat me. It's like, you know, it's funnier now. It's like, I had a good time. And Ann Arbor was really, it was a great town, I mean, for me. Bar was right down around the corner. I knew a lot of cops. And I couldn't have gone to a better place. But I came here to stay 2 years because I wanted a job with AP. Because I would run into Adams every once in a while, and I thought, I'd like to get a job with AP, go all over, blah, blah, blah. They offered me a job. I went to New York with some photos, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, yeah, you know, man, they didn't, you know, throw them aside. It's like, they called me, though, we got a job in Atlanta for you. Yeah? I said, they were union, I think. Can't remember. But I called the guys in Detroit, and I said, listen, I knew one of them real well, crazy guy from Jersey. What about, they offered me a job in Atlanta. He said, don't go. I said, why not? He said, because you know what it is? It's half desk and half photo. You get on the desk, you won't get off. What do you mean? You'll be pigeonholed. That's what you'll be, as a desk person. You won't be a photographer. I said, really? He said, they didn't tell me that. Of course not.
So outside of the time that you got hit,
yeah,
what are your most memorable photo shoot?
I made some good football pictures. Not football per se, but what happened around it. One was when the day that the running back, his brother played for the Giants, a cool guy. He gained, like, against Wisconsin, he gained, I think, over 400 yards. It was, like, up to that time, one of the most yards gained by a single player in the Big Ten. And he was walking off. He didn't have a helmet on. He got hit hard, and the helmet went flying. He's carrying his shoe. He just looked like a warrior, you know. It was a really cool photo. I think it's down in the field. And I made some good Woody pictures because Woody and Bo were showmen. And it was great. I mean, it was absolutely the best thing. Woody was really good at it, too. So was Bo, but not as good as – Bo played for Woody, but he wasn't as good as Woody was. And Woody made great photos. I mean, my dad used to come down, and you could have a sideline writer with you. So from negatives 22 to 30, 32, what happened, blah, blah, and my dad would write it down, and then we'd move. My dad was probably in the 70s. And he loved it, you know. He was up north. And we could go any place on the field. It wasn't like where you could only go through the Michigan end zone. You can't go around the Ohio State side. Well, back then you go wherever you want to go. I mean, I'd be standing right in with all the Ohio State players. My dad's right with me. And I don't know if you ever saw a picture. I got a great picture of Woody throwing the phone. Well, he's only like from here to that corner from me. And Michigan intercepted, and he turns around, he throws the phone, and he comes right next to me and slugs the sound man from ABC or wherever he was right in his stomach. Just hauls off and clunks him, right? And my dad said, he said, it's a good thing that sound didn't slug me. He said, I'd have flattened him. I said, oh, my God, my dad's going to flatten old Woody on the sideline. We'll never get back in here. Oh, it's hilarious. I don't know. You know what? The picture I gave John is a lot of what I did back then. I did a lot of nature kind of landscape, nature stuff. Because back then, Jeff Frank was the city editor, and he always was looking for something for today's paper. They always wanted to use a local photo on today's paper. Well, a lot of times you never had one. So you'd have to go out in the morning and make something for today. Not an assignment. Drive around, find something. Whatever, somebody hopefully sober, somebody not in a gutter. It's like for today's paper. So I did a lot of weather kind of related photos. And you kind of got to know where to go to look that something would produce something. You can't go on school grounds. There's a lot of stuff you can't do. You can't stop kids in a park. You can't go over and write their names down. So there's a lot of stuff you got to be careful of who and what and where, which is cool. But up north, I would go with the conservation officer. I would go with the cops. Up north, it was a lot different where I started. So I made a lot of real – I would go to the Coast Guard, call the Coast Guard station. What's going on? Is the buoy tender in yet? Well, he'll be in tomorrow. You can – come on down. We'll put you on the boat. So I'd go with them setting buoys, you know, in the big river and off the channel. And so there was a lot of – really cool stuff that you could go wherever, do whatever, you know, and they never checked your hours, but you had to do what that was the other thing. You had to do what they sent across. The Eck would throw the assignments down on your desk, and that's what you had. That you never knew where, how long, where you're going. Eck, I can't do these five in a row. Come on. Well, do the best you can. Oh, yeah, you know, five assignments all over, wherever. I mean, we did everything, you know, car wrecks. The other thing I didn't tell you about, I made a lot of money off in, is when they had the floods here, just after I got here, they washed out the railroad. They washed at Dixboro, they washed out the railroad, they washed out the dam, so we go shoot everything, right? And railroad call, you got any photos? In the? Yeah, we got a package here. So you become the local disaster photographer. The thing I really liked doing was shooting car races. I mean, I went down to the Grand Prix races in Detroit on my own. I finagled a pass, and I ran into a buddy of mine from Konietzko, Lothar Konietzko. He was a Luftwaffe pilot in World War II. He got shot down. He was 18 years old, and he got shot down, taken prisoner in the U.S. He came back over here as a photographer. He's a really cool guy. He knew everybody in the breweries. I know the guy that's got that apartment, three-story apartment, right on the end of the track. We gotta get around there, and we'll go up, and he'll let me in for 15 minutes. You come out with me. Well, right as it lined up with the cars coming down here to make the turn, was the Ren Sen and everything lined up perfect. I mean, you could have stayed there 3 weeks and never come up with a better spot, you know. And you shoot a roll and then you get the heck out, you know. So then we had limited access to a lot of stuff here, you know, whether a presidential person or Morris Udall or whoever came to town, because we were the local paper. We would get in, but not like the regular press people, you know. So it's really hard to separate, you know, what pictures do you – oh, when I took my buddies. I had this 22-foot sailboat, and we went to the America's Cup. And I asked them if I could get 3 days off to go to Rhode Island, go to the America's Cup. For what? I said, I'll go shoot pictures. Well, I never filed for press credentials or nothing, right? So I go down there to the Navy shipyard, driving rain, and there, I knew that cutter was going out on the race course, 35 miles out, 25 miles. And I tell this commander, yeah, what do you want? I said, what's my chances of getting aboard the boat? He said, you got a pass? I said, well, not really. He said, I got to go check with somebody. So he comes back. He said, I'm soaking wet, right? He said, yeah, come on aboard. Go get yourself a cup of coffee. Well, what it was that was the Vigilant. That boat was the boat that kept every other boat back from the race course. Well, the Australians, Dame Patty and Ted Turner was racing somebody, something. I can't. They'd come and cut right under the bow of the, I mean, it was really foggy, you know, but they came so you could get really cool stuff. It was great fun. I mean, and they used the picture page, and Dave Bishop, I think he gave me a bonus of $50. We stayed on my boat, the 22-foot Catalina. We had a 6-horse Johnson wheel, like 30 miles out in the ocean. It was great fun. I mean, pictures weren't worth, you know, a hill of beans, but that's the, you know, back then we could do that. Then you, up north, it didn't get down this far, but up north, they had guys calling you at 7 o'clock Sunday morning. Didn't know if they were sober. We got this fish. Yeah, so, well, we want you to take a picture of our fish. I said, I don't do fish on Sunday morning. So they'd bring this fish over, you know, and we'd run pictures of fish and deer and all kinds of stupid, you know. It was part of the game. But as you got down here, that all went out the window. But we did so many football games. Like in Ann Arbor, we would do 2 A games on Friday night, do Michigan or Eastern Saturday, and Catholic schools on Sunday. So you could do 5-6 games on a weekend, and they'd run photos, you know, but it got so repetitious. It's like Lothar one time, he wanted to go up north deer hunting. Wayne Associated Newspapers, that's who he worked for. So he went back and so he could get going early Friday night. He went back in last year's photos, and he printed from that the numbers were fairly obscured, and he would print these and turn them in as that's the game against. I mean, oh. Stanger, though, Eck had the best photo stories about the, they used to have, I don't know if it was a national cat show, or it was something like the dogs in Chicago, and it was like, you know, 90 degrees, and they brought the prize-winning cat, a white Angora cat, up to the 20th floor, and they had all the windows open because it was so hot. Yeah, you got the picture. And they set the cat on the table, and the guys are around, and the guy's shooting, I think, flash powder or big bulbs. They had big press 25s. You could light up this. Boom, 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 boom. All these lights go off and whatnot, and they look, and the cat's gone. I said, where's the cat? He said, see that little white mask down there? It's like, that's Toby. Right out the...
Was it part of your job to listen to the police scanner and for when fires and wrecks and things like that? Or did somebody call you in the middle of the
car.
Night?
I had a Volkswagen. I always had Volkswagens. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And they got to where they'd call me at the bar. We got an explosion on North Campus, so call somebody else. I'm busy, you know, or...
Would you just get calls all hours of the night and you just have to run out and make it to a scene? And
we got a big fire going in Ypsilanti, 2 o'clock in the morning. It's freezing like hell. No heater in a car. Go to Ypsilanti, shoot a house fire, and they wouldn't even run it, you know, because whatever. There was a big fire down here by the Michigan golf course across the street where big petroleum storage areas, and they caught fire. I don't know how. I mean, you could see the flames. Like, they had all the streets blocked off, so you can't get anywhere near it. So we drove up on a Michigan golf course on the backside and went all the way across the golf course, snuck down through these yards, and damn German shepherds were, like, going to kill us. I got great photos. I mean, and flames flying off. It was all black and white. But, I mean, the cops in Ann Arbor, they were fairly lenient. I mean, they went out of their way to help you if they could, you know. Tremel knew everybody. So
what percentage of the photos you had to shoot were assignments versus on-the-spot things versus free shooting?
Yeah, that's later on it was mostly assignments. But they couldn't assign a photo for tomorrow's paper because they don't know what's out. Those guys never left the building. I mean, so a lot of it was go out and come back with something. It's really hard. Maybe 50-50, something in that neighborhood. The assigned photos were kind of stupid. I mean, it's like they run on a .com now, headshots. They run a full page of basically headshots. I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, somehow or other, we're going to run a headshot of every person in Ann Arbor and run them in 2 days of newspapers, like graduation photos. And then we never have to do that again because they're all in a paper. They're stupid as all get out. And now here they are, what, 2011, they're doing the same thing all over, full page. I mean, there's nothing worthwhile to shoot in Ann Arbor other than heads of kids at some park or team photos. How many softball team photos can you do? And why? Who cares? His mother, maybe, but I don't know. But the good stuff outweighed the stupid stuff, I guess, is how to shake it out.
Fairly soon after you came, you were able to shoot stories about the Michigan murders. You were also here. I mean, that was a pretty
Vietnam. It was the war protests.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about your memories of that?
Well, we would do march photos because every noon hour they had a march. I mean, right down Main Street. I look back at some of them, and what amazes me is the clothes, the baggy, you know, and it's so different than today. I mean, I don't even know if they have a march in Ann Arbor anymore for anything. You know, it was city council was very rambunctious then. The Rainbow People's Party was getting elected. John Sinclair, we'd go over to Johnson over on Hill Street. It was really something, the 60s, the 70s. There was a lot of stuff, from natural disasters to government. I think SDS was formed here before that time. But, I mean, that was kind of the way Ann Arbor was then, kind of. Eko said, this town's a lot more conservative than what you give credit for. And then later on, I agreed with him. It's like, yeah, it's not as liberal as what they like to think. I was in Battle Creek when Martin Luther, that's right, and when he got shot, was right in that time of 68. I came here in June, 90 degrees. Oh, God, it was terrible. They didn't make great photos, but it was still something. You know, and the cops would surround City Hall and the sheriff's department. They were all armed, you know, and they'd put dogs at you. No, get them. You know, it's like, get that damn dog out of here. We always had two photographers. You go with another guy because he shoot the picture when they put the dog on you. And you get, really, you had to because the cops were, there was big stuff going on, you know. And I don't remember so much burning cars, but the students were, they had backbone, man. They got up against, you know, it was good. Now it's like, whatever happened to people protesting, whatever. I was thinking about the Afghanistan war the other day. You know, I read the column every day, Sergeant so-and-so. And when they see a sergeant, I know he's going to be 33-year-old, been in the military 15 years, shot, blah, 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 blah. Below him, two guys, 19, 22 from San Jose. Nobody says a word. It's just like, what the hell ever happened? Whatever. I was listening this morning. Oh, now they're backsliding on when they're going to get out of Afghanistan. Now they're kind of pushing it back, and I'm thinking, I don't know. Something's wrong here. See, back then, too, like the demonstrations and the marches and the cops would come around wanting photos. Subversive. You heard the Michigan State Police subversive they would want photos. Were you at such? Yeah, I was there. Can we see your negatives? No. Can you make us some prints? No. I mean, are you serious? What, are we, all of a sudden, we're state police subversive squad? And that's the way it was. You know, I mean, there was no, but that's what I liked about it too, is that it's not a legit regimented, go here, sit there, turn out this. Some days, there was like, we had a big fire going down in Saline. I mean, you could see the smoke walking down the street in Ann Arbor, right? It looked like Saline was burning. And so the boss was Adeline Adams. She was one of the better photo bosses, really. And she was a, what the heck was she? She wasn't, they ran out of people to make photo bosses, so they made her the photo boss. Go see if you can go down there and find out what's going on. So I'm going down State Street, and the closer I get, I'm saying, I'm going to go to the airport and see if there's anybody. I talked to this young kid. I said, oh, how about you take me up in that Cessna over there? I said, are you a pilot? He said, yeah. I didn't ask him to show the paperwork. I said, I want to go shoot a picture of that fire. Man, he flew around. We got great pictures of the fire, you know, and I'm back on the ground going back to the newspaper like in 40 minutes. And I got all these pictures. She said, how'd you do that? And I said, I lucked out, man. I went to the airport and I met this kid. Who was he? I said, did he charge you? No, he just took me in the plane. Away we went. So the whole job was kind of informal. Like I did most of the John Norman Collins murders. And when he went to trial, I did most of that. And I sold shit to Bunte Illustrated in Germany. You wouldn't believe how I had a lot of markets that they called. Jack, have you got anything from the latest trial? Yeah, I'll send you half a dozen photos. And $250, you take them or leave them. You know, it's no arbitration here. Tremel and I went to Jackson Prison and interviewed Collins. We were there like 2 hours. And he's sitting right where you are. You know, he's banging the table. I didn't do that. I didn't do this. That. John, you're here for a reason. Okay, blah, blah, blah. And we shot all these pictures of him. And we got all done. He wouldn't sign the release. I said, I'm not signing no damn. My picture's going to end up on a soup can. And blah. I said, no, John, come on. Tremel just sat there and he's waiting. So I finally convinced him. The warden came in with some papers. And he said, get John to sign. He's ready to sign this. It took forever to convince him that he finally signed him, though. And, yeah, we would put it on the wire as soon as we got back to Ann Arbor and everybody from here to wherever. Because nobody had gotten a prison interview with him. Tremel was the first one, or maybe the only one. And it was pretty weird. This guy just, yeah, especially since seeing 5 or 6 or 8 of the bodies. And this guy sitting right there, it's bizarre. Yeah, the murders were very, very scary. I had 2 daughters in high school at the time. And some of the bodies were found near our house. This went on and on and on. I mean, I look at it like I came into newspapers at the exactly right time and stayed exactly just long enough. So the injury was like, as much as I pissed and moan about it, it was actually a pretty good thing. Because I got out. Well, when I got out, I started building boats. Because I was sitting around going nuts, like, I don't drink anymore. What am I going to do with all this? So my buddy, he helped me get started. And I forget what boats. We built little boats. I built a couple fish boats. Then I built a big sailboat, 32-foot sailboat to go to Ireland. Now I've been building kayaks and fishing boats for 15 years. And I got 13 boats in the yard. And she says, the day you die, I'm calling every one of your kids to get the hell out here and take a boat out of the yard. I said, boy, that's really a cool memorial. That shows you what you think of my artistic my artistic endeavors. I haven't been able to drive. You know, I got ID. I've been passing out for 2 years. Heart stuff, whatever. Can't ID it. They don't know why. Baba. Then it got closer and closer. 2 in a week. No driving. You're done. 6 months.
What?
So I started wearing a heart monitor. You got something off the heart monitor a week ago, Monday, yesterday. Go to St. Joe Emergency now. Why? I've been having this for 2 years, and now I'm going to St. Joe Emergency now at dinner time? Yeah, now. So I go there, and what happened was this lady at Michigan Heart picked up. I don't know where she got it off the tape or whatever the monitor showed. My heart was slowing down and stopping. 3.7, 4.2, Bob, right, stopping. That's the blackouts. I sat there for till Tuesday morning. I got some doctors and you need a pacemaker. No, I already had bypass surgery. No, you need a pacemaker. Your heart is stopping. You can't lift anything. You can't drive. You can't that. But the doctor who was standing alongside my gurney before I went down the hall, he says, I said, what about golf? No golf, 5 weeks. Summer will be over. What about driving? My wife wasn't there. She was out in the hall. 7 days. I said, you know, if you weren't so ugly, I'd give you a kiss. 7 days, Manny went from 6 months. I got my little red card. First time I've driven since. We live north of Chelsea, North Lake, out in the woods, you know, to not drive. So my wife and I bitch at her because, ride, you're a passenger in a car is totally different than driving. And you say one more word to me, you're not going to have one driver. You're not going to have any driver. Like, so we got a baby now. And because due to digital, this is a plus for digital. I have like 7 boxes of photos. Every time this kid moves, you know, she was washing her mom's car. She's got her diapers on it. She's got a big mop and she's washing the car. It was the greatest photo. And I mean, I got boxes and boxes. Because you go down at CVS, you can make 78 prints for $6. And you can go get 20 by 30 blow-ups. We got one made the other day on canvas. Did you ever do that? You send it to this company in Kansas or someplace. I knew where this dandelion field was. I said, Carrie, when you come down here next week, give me the baby. We're going to shoot in this dandelion field. And she was just barely able to stand on her own. So I said, just get her balanced enough and then get that out of the way. It was a really cool picture. So Sandy sent it in the other day and got a, oh, it's like this. And they wrap, and we took it to Pictures Plus and they wrap it. It's really cool. But that's where photos gone. You know, everybody's got, I this year's Christmas card, I already got it made. You ever go by Zingerman's at Christmas time with that big tree that they light up the whole tree? I took a tripod down there one night before Christmas this year. I said, that's next year's. And I shot, well, what it did, it made all the lights around it stars. It's really cool. You shoot through screens. My boss showed me how to do it. I stopped at the hardware in Dexter and bought these 12-inch screens, screen door screen, and you put it in front of the lens, and as you turn it, you make stars. You ever do it?
I haven't done that.
Oh, it's cool. But you got to put the camera on a tripod because I do it, you know, 10-second exposure, whatever. Who cares? The cars. And you just turn it, and you get all these star patterns. Oh, it's cool. But Zingerman's, of course, they don't celebrate Christmas, but who cares? It's a nice photo.
To see some of Jack Stubbs' photos for the Ann Arbor News, go to oldnews.aadl.org.
Music for this episode has been From the Score to the Back Page, composed and performed by Stephen Ball, available at aadl.org/backpage.
AADL Talks to Jack Stubbs has been a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.